Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The host of the Game Theory podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes. It's Sam Vecenie making the big interview.
Award-winning columnists and authors, athletes, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show. Big interview. Presented by Bank of Bartlett on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Sam Vecenie, it's your old pal Gary. How you doing?
Hey, man, how's it going? I didn't get to see you out in Phoenix, man. It was one of the few disappointments I had throughout the week.
I didn't see anybody. I never saw you. I never saw Norlander. I never saw Borzello. I never saw Goodman. I never saw Thamel, Dana. I did see Pat very briefly, Pat Forty. It's just like you have to come to the trailer outside of the stadium to, like, hang out. Or at night, by the time we would wrap work, we were staying so far away from everything. It just never made sense to leave the place where we were staying. And so I didn't. This is in all of my Final Fours, and I've been to now, I think, maybe 14 or 15 of them. This is the least I've gone out in the history of my college basketball reporting career. Perhaps I'm just getting old, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, I actually feel the same way. I've only been to now three or four, but this was definitely the one that I went out least at. And I feel like it's because Phoenix is so spread out, right? Like, you have to go to Scottsdale, or you have to go downtown, or you have to go all the way out to Glendale, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere, right? So, yeah, no, I feel the same way. I feel like everyone but our good buddies, Rob Doster and Jeff Goodman, probably feel the same way.
Yeah, no, they were out every night. They'd be texting in the middle of the night. I was like, dude, I got work to do. I can't hang out with you guys. But it did seem like every time you get a text message from anybody, whether it was a friend or, you know, an agent or a coach or anybody, it would be like, hey, what are you getting into? And I'd say, I'm here. And they'd say, okay, cool, we're here. If you get out, come this way. And then I would go to MapQuest. I would punch it in, and it would be like 45 minutes away. And I said, I'm not going to – because the thing was, if you get in a car now and you go 45 minutes, at the end of the night, you got to come back 45 minutes. I was like, yep. You know what? I'm just going to – we're at a nice little place right here in Desert Ridge. I'm just going to stay right here by the outdoor fire pit and keep ordering drinks from this waitress. But it was a good time. It was just a very different Final Four. You watched last night's game. There were 44 fouls called in 40 minutes, 46 field goals only. Both teams shot under 40%. Let's start with the officiating. Were they bad, or were there just a lot of fouls and they caught a lot of fouls?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I kind of err toward the bad side, right? Like, you know, these are two of the most physical teams in the country. We've been talking about those teams' front courts being the best in the country pretty much the entire season, right? And with that is going to come a physical game. But having said that, a lot of the fouls that were called, I mean, you saw them, I saw them, everyone at home saw them. Like, there was one where it was kind of like right in front of me. Kennedy Meeks just, like, establishes position. He beats Chemek Karnowski to the spot. And then Chemek just, you know, kind of runs into him, bounces off at him because Kennedy's a big guy. And they call a foul on Kennedy Meeks for standing right there. It was ridiculous. And then there was the Zach Collins fourth foul that totally, I mean, I don't think it's unfair to say that shifted the way the game went, right? Like, Gonzaga had to use totally different lineups. They'd use Killian Tilly for, what, probably 10, 12 minutes in the second half, and that's probably something they didn't really want to do. So, yeah, I think that more than it being a physically officiated game, it was a badly officiated game, and that's before we even get into the non-judgment calls that were Kennedy Meeks' hand being out of bounds or – you know, I don't even think that flagrant foul call that was called on Chemek Karnowski was a judgment call. Like, it was a bad call to me. So,
let me stop you there for a second, because on the flagrant, it felt to me, and I said this to, we were watching, you know, right outside the stadium, it felt to me like they knew that the initial foul call wasn't a foul, and they were just trying to balance it out.
Yep, that's exactly what our good friend Mike DeCourcy, my colleague at Sporting News, said to me after the game. Right. He felt like, you know, Chemek probably got Joel a little bit more than Joel got Chemek, so we're just going to even it out by calling a foul on Chemek. And that's not a great way to officiate. I mean, we need to, as a college basketball media system and as the NCAA, which makes billions of dollars off of this NCAA tournament, we need to come together and find a way to fix officiating in this sport, because it's been a disaster all season. I mean, I'm not breaking ground there. It's been really, really bad all season long. We need to make a significant investment to where these officials are not working part-time anymore. At least we have more full-time officials going forward.
Well, that's the thing I don't think casual basketball fans realize. These guys are independent contractors, and calling basketball yep. games isn't the only thing that they do. John Higgins, famously, it was known last week because Kentucky fans were wild and on his Facebook page, you know, he's a roofing company. Like, he does other things. And when you contrast that with the way NBA officials work, they get first, NBA officials get more rest, so they're fresher from a game-to-game basis. And it is all they do. Like, they study their job nonstop, 7 days a week. And I really do think if we've reached a point where basketball coaches can make $8 million a year and the NCAA can sign billion-dollar contracts with CBS and Turner, like, why can't we have full-time officials at least enough to, like, get us through the NCAA tournament? Because they had a big impact on that game last night, and it really plays into the stereotype that perhaps isn't that unfair, that college basketball officials aren't very good.
Look, I mean, would it be that hard for the NCAA, and I know that I'm about to throw out a big number,
right,
but, like, would it be that hard for the NCAA to set aside $3 million for this offseason and say, hey, we're going to hire 30 of our best officials, we're going to pay them $100,000 a year, we're going to say, hey, stop whatever you're doing on the side, become a full-time official, we'll give you health benefits, we'll give you everything else, and just do this. We want you to be as good of an official as possible so that, you know, whenever we come down to the NCAA tournament, at least, we're not, you know, looking at this like it's a terrible situation, right? Like, to me, that's not a big outlay for a company or for an organization that, again, is giving out billion-dollar deals for TV distribution.
I mean, what do they have to pay Aerosmith to get to show up? I mean, just take your Aerosmith.
No joke.
I mean, take your Aerosmith money and your Bruce Springsteen money and your Macklemore money and your the Black Keys money and invest it in officiating. And it might have to be more than what you said, actually. Maybe it's not $100,000 a guy. Maybe it's $250,000 a guy. And so we're talking about $7.5 million for 30 of them. But either way, $7.5 million is nothing to the NCAA. And that is one obvious way to fix this problem. Go find the 30 best officials in the country and make them full-time officials where this is all that they do. And perhaps you'd get a better on-the-court product, something that doesn't embarrass the sport like last night did. I'm talking to Sam Vecenie here on 92.9 FM ESPN. What do you attribute the poor shot-making to? Because one of the frustrating things about last night's title game was, you and I watch this every day. We know that last night's game wasn't a reflection of the current state of college basketball. The shot-making has been better. Scoring has been up. Percentages are up. The game's being played at a better tempo. There's a lot of good that happened in this season. But for the folks who just tune in to the championship game, and the reason they don't tune in to much else is because they find college basketball to be unwatchable for two reasons. Players can't make shots, and the officiating sucks. I mean, you can't do worse than what we did last night, because nobody shot better than, I think, 38% from the field, and the officiating was, again, there were 44 fouls called in 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think some of that is honestly just bad luck. Like, Shemek Karnowski went 1-for-8 from the rim, like
right,
at the rim.
Right.
Like, when is that going to happen again? I think that you could give Shemek, I was talking to Tommy Lloyd about this, Gonzaga's assistant and like head coach in waiting, whenever Mark Few decides to hang it up after the game last night. And he goes, I honestly cannot remember a game where Shemek played that poorly around the rim. So, like, you tell me one out of the 130 games that Shemek Karnowski has played, that this is just like kind of a bad timing situation. And Nigel Williams-Goss was hurt with his ankle and couldn't get as much lift. I think that he was struggling with the shot a little bit. And Justin Jackson, I mean, I do think that he won't admit this, but I think Justin Jackson might have some issues with just these big football stadiums. And that kind of leads into a grander point, right? Do we think that these football stadiums are the best way to decide a national champion, even if they're making billions again dollars at the gate as far as revenue? I would like to see them go back to just like straight basketball arenas. I think it would be better for the sport. I think that it wouldn't take as much adjustment from the student athletes. And I know that there have been statistical studies that say there's not really any sort of difference in terms of, you know, percentages that are shot from three and from 2-point range. But I can't help but think that just making players make the adjustment in some capacity makes it a little bit more difficult, right? Like, not a lot more difficult, but there's got to be like some sort of, maybe it's just like higher variance, right? Maybe different players are going to have a little bit more struggles whenever you're in a situation like that. And I think we've seen it from Justin Jackson over the course of the last 2 years. That guy's a tremendous shot maker, and he is not making shots in these football stadiums.
Well, think about it in these terms. In what other sport do we do this? Like, we don't ask Steph Curry to play in an 18,000-seat arena all year long and then say, okay, NBA Finals, now we're putting you in a dome. We don't ask football players to everything looks the same for basically everybody in every sport except for college basketball. We get to the end, and then suddenly you're playing in front of 77,000 people. I can't think of another sport that does this. You play golf. The golf courses look like golf courses. You play tennis. You know, the courts look like the courts. You play college basketball. Suddenly you get to the very end, if you're lucky enough to get there, and everything looks wilder than you've ever seen it before.
Yeah, which, by the way, let's be clear on what this is. I mean, it's a blatant money grab for, like, the NCAA, and they still won't pay officials to be full-time.
Right.
It's just insane to me the way that that organization kind of handles college basketball in general. I know that this is a rule change here for all of the committees that kind of decide on the different, you know, things that go on in college basketball. I really hope that these guys, these coaches, these administrators, everyone who's going to be involved in this process kind of takes a good long look at the perception that, you know, we showed off about college basketball last night, because it was not great. It was not great in either of the Final Four games either, really. Like, I know that the Gonzaga-South Carolina game was fine in the first half. There were a lot of points, but, you know, those two teams reverted back in the second half in a big way. So, you know, it was a disappointing Final Four in a lot of ways based on the quality of play, even though all three of the games were very, very close.
Talking to Sam Vecenie. You can find his work at sportingnews.com. He's host of the Game Theory podcast. You can subscribe at iTunes. Mark Few, like, they were ahead with 1:45 to go. Like, I don't know that you'll ever get over that. Like, you're ahead. And it was such a weird finish to that game, because it seemed like we were going down to the buzzer, and then the game was over with, like, 30 seconds to go. Like, it was just a block, a dunk, a turnover, and it was just, what just happened? How did this, like, how did we go from that to this? And he'll run that back in his head a million times. I think every coach who ever gets there assumes that they'll get back. It's hard to get back. I bet you Paul Hewitt thought, you know, on that night he was in the national championship game, that he's going to keep recruiting at a high level, he'll be back on that stage. Obviously never got back anywhere close to that stage. Do you think we see Mark Few in a national championship game again?
I hope so. I think that that story is tremendous. The way that Gonzaga has been able to build its program over the last 20 years from, you know, essentially not being able to replace kids' shoes unless they had holes in them, and the head coach making under $100,000 a year to what they are now. I mean, it's just an unbelievable story, and I hope that they get back. But I think it says a lot that, you know, it took this team 20 years and really like 12 years competing on the highest level to get to a single Final Four. That alone kind of tells you how difficult it is to make this kind of run, right? Like, it takes so much luck. It takes so much talent. It takes, you know, putting yourself in the right position and then things just kind of breaking right. And that's kind of what I wrote about last night. Like, you know, there are so many other factors outside of matchups and, you know, the way that X's and O's break down. It takes so much luck just to get to a singular point. And, you know, I hope that Mark Few can get over it. Honestly, I think he will, just knowing the way that he kind of operates. He's a guy that is not necessarily beholden to college basketball and beholden to his own success level. He's a lot more about, you know, just, you know, molding the minds of young people and making sure that he's there for them and being, he wants to be successful, no doubt, but he's a little bit different in terms of the way that he operates as a person. So, like, I don't think that he's going to necessarily take it as hard as some other coaches have, but I do just really hope he gets back, because this is a genuine Hall of Fame level basketball coach that, I mean, I hope he gets back, because I want him to continue to get the recognition he deserves for building that Gonzaga program from literal nothing to what it is now.
I agree with every word. I'm wrapping up here with Sam Vecenie. You can find his work, sportingnews.com, host of the Game Theory podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. Last thing before I let you go, seemingly every year, I don't know if this is true, I just know that people say it every year, there is a prospect who helps himself tremendously in the NCAA tournament. I guess if you were trying to argue that point, you'd say it was Malachi Richardson last year. Does that really happen? B, should it happen? And C, if it does, who is it this year, Sindarius Thornwell?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this kind of phenomenon at Vice, I think, 2 weeks ago, like in the middle of the second and third rounds of the NCAA tournament. It's something that, you know, I reached out to a bunch of NBA executives, and they said, you know, we would like to say that it doesn't affect us, but we're human. You know, like, we get caught up in the hype beast just as much as anyone else gets caught up in the hype train. So I think that it does affect it in a little slight way because it gets you out in front of more eyeballs in a more significant manner. And this year, I would say that I would point to two guys, and Darius Thornwell certainly helped himself just because there weren't a lot of eyeballs on South Carolina this year, right? Like, it really helps him to – he was definitely the SEC Player of the Year, and I feel like people in that area of the country know who he is and know how talented he is. But he got his name out in the grand scale during this NCAA tournament by being – you know, over the course of all five games, six games in the tournament, he's probably the best overall player. And the other guy, I think, is Zach Collins. Yep. Collins has been someone who's been on the periphery of, like, being one and done. He was a kind of a questionable guy to come out. You know, the feeling around Phoenix is that he's probably going to come out for the NBA draft, especially now after the way that he played in the Final Four. Big seven-footer who can knock down threes and has tremendous footwork in the post. And, you know, as we saw against South Carolina, he's a great rim protector who tries to contest everything with length and with athleticism. The thing is that this kid has now started 1 year out of his high school and college career, including not starting this year. He played 17 minutes a game this year. So he's still just very rudimentary in terms of his skill level. I mean, you can talk about athleticism and you can talk about the way that he's, you know, potentially going to be able to protect the rim, but he doesn't have a lot of game experience yet. But having said that, this is a kid that I think if he came out, probably goes in the top 20 from talking to people around the NBA. And, you know, if someone's going in the top 20, I say go, you know, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. And unless you hate money or just love school, you should probably get on with your professional career. That is Sam Vecenie. You can read his work, sportingnews.com. Subscribe to the Game Theory podcast over at iTunes. Thanks for being here, buddy. I owe you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.